Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Tuesday, January 18, 2022. Seven people were shot dead during protests in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
We have recorded seven deaths and approximately more than 40 others wounded with gunshots, and we have also different other types of wounds.
And some residents of the western Bahr al-Ghazal state capital say they are living in fear due to heavy deployment of South Sudan People's Defense Force in the state.
On the very day of the deployment, it kind of created some restriction of movement for the civilians. Civilians from that side were not able to brought even their produce to the market.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Central Committee for Sudanese Doctors say at least seven people were shot and killed and some scores were wounded by the Sudanese security forces during protests on Monday. The Sudanese Professional Association has called for 2 days of civil disobedience across the country to reject what the association describes as an ongoing killings of pro-democracy protesters. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
The Sudanese doctors say at least seven protesters died when security forces fired into a protest in Khartoum Tuesday. They say nearly 100 others are wounded and some are listed in critical conditions. A Sudanese doctor who preferred to remain anonymous for fear of reprisals from the security forces told South Sudan in Focus via phone that a majority of the wounded were shot in the chest and head. The doctors say some of the wounded could not make it to the hospital and have been arrested by the police.
We have recorded seven deaths and approximately more than 40 others wounded with gunshots, and we have also different other types of wounds. But the majority are due to gunshots. There are more than 8 cases inside the Khartoum state and in other towns as well.
Pro-democracy protesters reject the military coup on October 25th and continue to demand civilian rule. The Sudanese Professional Association, a coalition of different Sudanese professionals who played a significant role in ousting longtime President Omar al-Bashir in 2019, last night called for 2 days of civil disobedience starting Tuesday. The doctor confirmed that medical workers have begun the civil disobedience with some exceptions for critical medical conditions.
We have excluded critical conditions such as hemodialysis, severe bleeding, pediatric cases, and all other underlying conditions. However, the rest of the cases that are not critical, we don't respond to.
Universities, colleges, and some schools in Khartoum remain closed as they respond to the call of civil disobedience. The Vice Chancellor of Khartoum University, Professor Fadwa Abdulrahman, announced the suspension of routine work and lectures at the university on Tuesday and Wednesday in solidarity with the people involved in the civil disobedience. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus in Khartoum, Abubakar Hamid, a member of the Sudanese Teachers Union, says his group has directed all schools to suspend classes and observe the civil disobedience call.
Our students are now taking part in the ongoing protest as their expression to reject the military coup. This is part of their solidarity with their colleagues who are killed and wounded. Our hope is that the situation gets normal and our citizens are secure and safe as we continue to demand civilian rule.
The head of the Sudanese Sovereign Council, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, chaired a Security and Defense Council meeting Monday and ordered an immediate investigation into the ongoing killing of protesters. The government also approved the establishment of a special force to counter terrorism in the country. The United Nations Integrated Transition Assistance Mission in Sudan, or UNITAMS, said the use of live fire ammunition on the protesters was unacceptable. Its statement called on authorities to cease using force against peaceful protesters and conduct credible investigations into such incidents. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Still in Sudan, the Central Council for the Forces of Freedom and Change, a prominent Sudanese pro-democracy group, has conditionally accepted the UN's offer to broker and end the political deadlock following the October military takeover. However, Sudanese Professional Association, another key group, has rejected the UN's offer. Cameron Hudson, a senior fellow at the Africa Center for Atlantic Council, discussed with VOA's senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi prospects of mediation success in Sudan.
Well, I think we have to look at the context that this mediation is taking place in. On the streets of Khartoum today, there have been another 7 people killed by the military, unarmed civilians protesting for democracy. And so the military is right now holding the country hostage. And so we're negotiating with a group of people who no longer have the legitimacy, I think, to be a part of this civilian government. And so when you ask about the divisions within the FFC, or with the pro-democracy groups, I think there is a question about whether or not the military can actually play any role whatsoever as part of a transitional government to full civilian rule. That is the question, I think, the question that the international community is also grappling with, because they have made the military a partner in this arrangement. But how can you have a partner in government, which one day is killing people and the next day negotiating its, you know, political outcome? It's very difficult to square these two facts on the ground. And I think that's what people are struggling with right now.
David Satterfield, the new U.S. envoy to the Horn of Africa, is visiting Sudan this week, where he and U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Molly Fee, will meet military and political figures, as well as pro-democracy activists. Could that U.S. move facilitate a renewed civilian-led transition to democracy in Sudan?
I think only if the United States comes prepared to put pressure on the military. Thus far, the military has suffered no consequences, no punitive measures, either for the coup d'etat on October 25th or for the killing of now more than 70 pro-democracy activists on the ground. And so unless the United States decides that it is ready to impose sanctions on military generals who have ordered the killing, who have ordered the shooting and the use of snipers against innocent civilians on the ground, unless they are prepared to do that, then I don't believe that the United States is going to be able to rebalance the negotiations in favor of a civilian government. There's just no possibility. As long as the military continues to believe that their actions will meet with no international consequences, I think they will continue on the course that they are on, which will only lead to more bloodshed and division within the country.
In a recent article, you called for a tougher U.S. stance, and you said, beyond punitive measures, Washington needs a more active role in shaping an outcome that meets the demands of the Sudanese people, supports U.S. strategic interests in the region, and reflects President Joe Biden's own commitment to democracy and human rights. Can you explain how?
Well, I mean, I think it requires a full-on strategy that the United States has yet to demonstrate that it has, both a strategy for the immediate response to the crisis in Sudan, the political crisis and the security crisis being faced by pro-democracy protesters, but then also a strategy that leads us through this transition to elections and what we want Sudan to look like coming out of those elections, what role we want the military to play, and most importantly, what the Sudanese want their country to look like. We have some sense of that, but we really need a strategy to lead us through the next 3 years. And that's a strategy of diplomatic engagement. It's using our development assistance, our security assistance, and all the tools in our diplomatic toolkit. That's what we need to figure out how to use and when to use those resources. We simply do not have that roadmap that gets us from 2022 until elections and civilian rule and democracy in 2024 and beyond. And that's what I'm talking about.
That's Cameron Hudson, a senior fellow at Africa Center of the Atlantic Council, talking to VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi. Some South Sudanese political analysts warn the deals the SPLM-IN government signed with the SPLM-IN opposition Kidgwang faction and Agolek group may hamper efforts to restore peace and stability across the country. The analysts say the agreements create more confusion in implementing the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Professor Abraham Kwolenyuan, a lecturer at the College of Political Science at the University of Juba, says the deals signed in Khartoum over the weekend add no value to efforts to restore peace and stability in South Sudan. Instead, he says the agreements are likely to be a threat to the implementation of the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement. Kwol says the deals would have made more sense if they had been signed between the unity government and the two parties. He says the deals hold no water because they were signed only by the SPLM in government, which does not decide alone on issues affecting the revitalized transitional government of national unity. The Artigonu was created under what is known as RXIS, the Revitalized Agreement on the Resolution of Conflict in South Sudan.
And the SPLM is not ready only to sacrifice their seat. And if they do so, the SPLM will have wrangle within itself, because some people who are going to lose their position will not be happy. And if the president says this is the problem of the Artigonu, that means all the positions that need to be apportioned to Aguelet or to the Kidgwan group should come from the Artigonu. The other four signatories of the peace agreement will not accept that, because they were not made part of the negotiation team and part of the people that were involved in the peace process.
Kwol says the deals simply try to formalize the defection of the two groups, SPLM in opposition Kidgwan faction and the Aguelek forces, to the SPLM in government. He says procedurally, President Salva Kiir should have played the role of a patron and helped address the conflict between the SPLM in opposition Kidgwan faction and the SPLM in opposition Riek Machar faction.
This kind of peace agreement has no significance, because the parties to the problem the parties to this conflict have not been included, and that is specifically the IO, because this was specifically the problem within the IO, and the government has been seen from the very beginning as an IO issue.
Boboya James, a policy analyst at the Juba-based Institute for Social Policy and Research, says the process that culminated in the signing of the two deals did not emanate from the people. It was done in the shadows and had no spirit of dialogue and peacemaking.
It's going to add a lot of back and forth, bickering within the processes, right? It's actually going to disturb the spirit, the motivation level of people to implement the peace agreement, because they are now spoilers that are going to be talking about all these issues.
Jamie says the signing of the deals by President Kiir's party shows his lack of political will to fully implement the 2018 revitalized peace deal. He says besides political consequences, the deals may hurt the economy, as the government will have to provide funds for the leaders of the SPLM-IO Kidgwan faction and the Aguelek forces.
It's a defection deal because these people they don't have chances of accessing money, no access of coming back into South Sudan. So the best option is to defect from the IO mainstream into something they call it in government, SPLM in government.
Professor Kwol says the deal signed with the Aguelek forces leader General Johnson Oloni falls short of addressing the problems that led to the group's rise, including land disputes. He says the community the Aguelek group comes from has not been consulted or involved in the process, which may affect implementation of the deal. For that agreement to garner support from the parties implementing the revitalized peace agreement, Kwol says it needs to be put on hold, and the parties to the revitalized peace deal should be consulted and endorse it. The Aguelek forces had served under the SPLM-IO led by first vice president Riek Machar, but last year defected together with Machar's former chief of staff, General Simon Gadwich. Both formed what is now the SPLM-IO Kidgwan faction. But during the recent meetings in Khartoum, Oloni and Gadwich signed separate deals with the SPLM in government. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, some residents of Western Bahr el-Ghazal state capital, Wau, say they are living in fear. Find out why after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. And in our Tuesday health segment, we look at the COVID-19 Omicron variant. Research indicates the Omicron variant of the coronavirus spreads faster than its predecessors. As Omicron infections surge in the United States, President Joe Biden promises his administration will purchase 1 billion COVID-19 tests and make available free to Americans. U.S. Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Math is pushing back on critics who say the administration is not doing enough to control the pandemic. VOA's Arish Arabsati has more.
The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, that's the CDC, recently released updated guidance for masks to protect against the COVID-19 disease. The Protective Healthcare Production Facility in Paterson, New Jersey, is the N95, considered the premier respirator for protection against the infection.
The purpose of vaccines, the most important job of vaccines, is to save your life and keep you out of the hospital. And by that measure, these vaccines and boosters are working and working well. Now, you will hear, as many people have already heard, about people who have cases that are mild or asymptomatic, people who test positive despite being vaccinated or boosted. But keep in mind, what is often being prevented there is a more severe infection.
Murphy added that data shows strong efficacy for vaccination despite a roughly 20% chance for infection in those who are both vaccinated and have received a booster shot. The Biden administration has faced criticism for not acquiring enough masks and tests as Omicron spreads through the country.
When Omicron came, it created an extraordinary increase in demand. It's why the U.S., the U.K., and other countries found themselves without as much testing as they needed. But we are pulling out the stops on testing.
Dr. Murphy says the administration oversaw an eightfold increase in testing between December and January. Critics say it's simply not enough. Former Trump Homeland Security Advisor Bossert adds that pandemic-weary Americans must remain vigilant.
Americans that are frustrated and giving up, I think they need to hear that a return to some rigor in our social distancing is necessary because our hospital beds and, more importantly, our hospital ICU beds are filling up and in some states are completely full.
The World Health Organization recently reported 15 million new COVID-19 cases in 1 week, a 55% jump from earlier figures. The U.S. alone accounts for nearly 800,000 new infections each day. The CDC has yet to recommend nationwide usage of the N95 mask, but the Washington Post reports the agency is considering updated guidance. Arash Arabsati, VOA News.
Still on COVID, the number of people who suffered a major depressive order worldwide rose 28% in 2020 during the pandemic to an estimate of 246 million cases. Those suffering from anxiety disorders rose to 26%. This finding comes from a survey using data from studies collected in North America, Europe, and East Asia. As Laura Bowman reports, the study found women fared more worse than men.
Anxiety and depression are up in the age of COVID. A Lancet survey estimates the number of people worldwide suffering from a major depressive disorder rose by 28% in 2020. Those with anxiety disorders worldwide increased by 26%. The effects of lockdowns, school and business closures, and the spread of the virus in general are among the factors blamed for the rise, say researchers. Margaret Sullivan, who is 87, has been stuck at home caring for her 92-year-old husband.
There are days when I'm really sad, but I don't know whether it's the COVID that makes me sad or the other things going on that were going on anyway. For us, when you know you don't have that many years left, it's a lost year.
The elderly can be especially at risk for both isolation and faring poorly if they catch the virus. But mental health experts say they are hearing from young people the most. During the first year of the COVID-19 pandemic, an estimated 1 in 4 youths globally experienced clinically elevated depression symptoms, while 1 in 5 young people experienced higher anxiety, according to JAMA Pediatrics. Dr. Beth Salcedo heads the Ross Center for Anxiety and Depression in Washington, D.C.
I think in this country, certainly stigma has really changed in the last 20 years, and certainly with our younger population, they're talking about anxiety and depression a lot, whereas people, you know, in my generation and older didn't talk about it so much.
22-year-old Eva Zarpas had her college studies go virtual during COVID-19. She says the isolation has heightened the anxiety and depression she already felt.
Being unable to connect with large groups of people in the way that, you know, humans are used to. It was really hard just to wake up, you know? Being asleep was my favorite thing about the day because I didn't have to be awake and be thinking and wanting to be with people but not being able to.
Her 14-year-old sister Stella suffered too.
It's important for kids to always be around each other. Just that sheer isolation, which really made it difficult to kind of cope with all the other things when you're not getting just basic needs met by talking to other people.
Experts say it will take time for the mental health effects of COVID-19 to pass. Dr. Beth Salcedo.
People have lost a lot in this last year and a half. It'll be 2 years, and they're going to have to put their lives back together. And I think it's going to take a while. And I think the ramifications from an emotional point of view are going to take a long time to fully recover.
Demand for treatment for anxiety disorders has increased since the start of the pandemic, according to the American Psychological Association. Laurel Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
Residents in the western Bahr al-Ghazal state capital, Wau, say they are living in fear after the South Sudan People's Defense Force, or SSPDF, deployed soldiers in parts of the town. The mayor says the deployment reportedly prompted the SPLA-IO to do the same in Bagari, Basilia, and Farajala areas in Wau County. A military spokesperson confirms the deployment of soldiers, but says there is no need for residents to panic. Dengai Deng reports for VOA from Bor.
A resident of Wau town who spoke on condition of anonymity for fear of reprisals from the security forces says heavily armed soldiers drove to the town with artillery weapons yesterday. He says the soldiers deployed to checkpoints and began stopping civilians coming into the town.
On the very day of the deployment, it kind of created some restriction of movement for the civilians. Civilians from that side were not able to bring even their produce to the market. Some of them reported that the checkpoint and stations. So those civilians are coming to the access services and goods in the market in Wau and going back to the area. They are not cattle people. So this created kind of confusion and mischance between the communities and the authorities. But most importantly, it also disrupted the market operations because the prices of farm produce from those fields that stopped coming, the prices now shoot up in the market, and civilians are complaining, traders are complaining. So this is what happened here in Wau.
Another Wau resident is Stephen Robo, says he and other residents are in panic because they do not know why the soldiers are there.
These people panic. Because the deployment happened at night, and people just caught up in the morning, and the forces around cleaning their face. They're not asking anybody, just they're doing their business. But their presence was panicky, simply because the area that has deployed those forces into, it has a front line when the war in the town, so that has been a front line. So now as the IDPs are returning to the area, seeing again the forces, armed forces, that again are all to their trauma, or that there might be something wrong is going to happen, so that is a panic. There's also limitation of free movement of the civilians to and from the town.
Addison Arcangelo, the Western Bahr el-Ghazali State Information Minister, confirmed that South Sudan's People's Defense Force soldiers have deployed in Wau Town. Arcangelo says the deployment in parts of the state is a security precaution to prevent conflicts between cattle keepers and farmers.
They deploy some of the soldiers because from January, February up to before the rain season, we are facing a lot of challenges and a lot of cattle keepers that are just coming to Western Bahr el-Ghazali State. To not fall in, because we are in a justice process and we want all the citizens to just move freely from the state to state, from county to county. That's why they deploy these forces, just to protect the civilians, not more than this.
Wau Mayor Paulino Sahit Oku says the deployment created rumors and caused fear among the residents, and says local authorities were not told the reason for the deployment. He says the SSPDF deployment reportedly prompted the SPLA-IO to do the same in the Pagheri, Bisilia and Parajala areas in Wau County.
They have deployed the checkpoints in Wau Town. The deployment of soldiers scared the civilians, but we are talking to the security to establish the situation. Because if something happened like that, the civilians will think there is something going to happen.
Oku urges the residents of Wau Town to remain calm as his office talked to security officials in the state. Major General Lul Roy Kong, the South Sudan People's Defense Force spokesperson, says the troop deployment in Wau was to provide better security in the area.
What had happened was a minor deployment or enforcement of an outpost at a place called Metebo, southeast of Wau. Initially, we had a squad miners in that area. So more platoon was sent to increase the number of squad miners that had been there. And the main issue is that it is a very strategic outpost because it controls illegal movement of firearms out in and out of Wau.
General Kong urges the residents of Wau not to panic, saying it is a routine exercise to maintain security. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaiding in Bor.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now end this show with Simon Kero and his classic song, Bambe Makaimo.
Kaimo moya garwa saki Bambe mkaimo moya garwa saki Zaman motoro zede matoturu dumara Zaman matara zede matoturu dumara Bambe mkaimo moya hilo wasaki Bambe mkaimo moya hilo wasaki Washini dunga mayani mefare Washini dunga mayani mefare Aparwe miajiro jini kusende unakwario Aspire garanga juba na wawo wada Bambe makaimo moya garwa saki.
We've been listening to Simon Kero and his classic song, Bambe Makaimo. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, vehicles, and phones. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Washini dunga mayan me parende ku kandara kamsa ginia kamuni fungarufa.